Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on Facebook. We're live on YouTube. We're live on Twitch. We're live on my favorite website of all time, X. You know, X.com. We're live on there.
X gonna give it to you?
X gonna give it to you. Yeah, DMX's old website. We're streaming directly there for some reason.
That's smart.
We're going to corner the market on that, I think.
Yeah.
We are also coming to you later on Spotify or iTunes or Apple or whatever you want to call it. Basically every major platform. This is kind of the last time I'll say it because I think it's coming away tomorrow. But if you are subscribed on Stitcher, stop subscribing on Stitcher because the platform is going away. It's not going to exist anymore. So please subscribe. Other places were available literally everywhere. One thing that is not available, though, is Justin, who is not here for today's show. He is on a mountain somewhere. Is that what's going on? Or just he was said upstate, and I assumed mountains.
Oh, yeah, sure. He's upstate, which we all know is jail. He was sent to jail.
He went to jail?
Yeah.
What did he do you think?
He's probably filming a documentary about jail.
Oh, okay. Not like he's in jail, like he's filming a documentary about jail.
Yeah, yeah.
Or do you think he's doing like an undercover boss situation, except got arrested?
Yeah, let's see. Can't wait for the footage.
Oh, my God. It's going to be so good. You know what else is going to be so good is tonight's show, because we have some great guests for you this evening. Why don't we bring in our first guest? She is the creator of Skeletor.
Yeah.
Decomposer, which is out right now from Penguin Workshop. Ladies and gentlemen, Emily Ettlinger. Woo-hoo! Emily, welcome. Hello.
Hi.
Thank you so much for coming to the show. Thank you for talking about this great book. This, as I mentioned, came out August 8th, right? So
yes.
It's been out for a little bit. It's a lovely, would you say, all ages book? Is that how it's aimed?
Yeah.
Or adults
only? I'd say officially ages 6 to 9, but I'm told by my parents that people much older can really enjoy it.
Okay, cool. Well, I am an older person, spoiler, and I enjoyed it. It is about a skeleton that just desperately wants to play music with humans, is advised by a bat. I found it absolutely delightful.
Yeah.
This is your first graphic novel, right? So is this something that has been churning around to the back of your mind for a while? Is it something that just came together very quickly? What was the process that led to Skeletor?
I'd say it's been around since 2019, so not that long. I drew a skeleton for Inktober playing a fiddle. And then I started playing around with the idea of like, oh, it'd be funny if there's a skeleton who plays music and doesn't understand why she keeps like scaring townspeople away, and it's because she's a skeleton, but she thinks it's because she's like bad at playing music. And then spoiler for the book, then I thought, oh, it'd be really funny if she thought it was because she was scary and a skeleton and that's why they were running away, but it's actually because she kind of sucks at playing music. Which led to the rest of writing the book.
So what was it like when you got the news that you're going to be able to make your first graphic novel? Was that something that you were thrilled about and then suddenly realized, oh no, now I actually have to make it? Or what was the feeling like?
It kind of felt like when you trip running down walking down the stairs, and then you just have to keep on walking really fast to not completely tumble down the stairs. Because it actually happened pretty quickly. I was really lucky. Nice. But I also just kept on, like, the editor at the time asked me, like, oh, are you so excited? And I was like, I'll be excited when it's published, because I, like, didn't want to believe it was, like, real just in case. I'm still like, what if they just pull them all off the shelves and say, never mind.
Oh, no.
Well, I was going to ask about that. Now that it has been out for a couple of weeks, what has the response been like? Have you been able to go to any bookstores and, you know, be like, oh, this book looks good, check this out. Or
I've done two bookstore events. Everyone around me's been super supportive. My mom actually went and like took selfies with people buying it, like, with the customers. She's on Instagram now, just like with it in selfies. The book events were really fun. I let one of them turned into being all adults, even though it was a children's event. But they were old enough that I let them do the screaming parts themselves. And then the next one was like all babies who could not care less about the book because they're like three and have no idea what's going on. Which is fine. I kind of expected it, but it's just really funny when, you know, a little kid is just audibly saying like, I'm bored, I want to leave.
Oh no.
Or like another one was sitting in front of me, like with his dad, making his dad read him another book, like during the live reading.
Is a little bit of a weird question, but last week on the show, we had another creator who also did a book about a skeleton. Total coincidence. But we were talking to him a little bit about his process in terms of how you artistically represent a skeleton. You both have very, very different books, so you're approaching it in different ways. But same sort of thing for you. What was important in terms of having a skeleton, particularly because you don't have a ton to work with there? Like, you have a literal skeleton. You have the literal bones, which are sort of set for you. Obviously, you're taking a cartoony approach to it. But what were your guidelines in terms of creating this character visually?
This is not my first skeleton character. I had been working on,
you know, that was the original expression before this is not my first rodeo. This is not my first skeleton character. But no, anyway, go first, ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. And so I had a skeleton character that I'd been working on the design of a while ago. So I definitely took some elements of what I'd learned from drawing him to drawing Skeletor, and then simplified even more. Just because she's like fairly cutesy and I knew I was going to be drawing her a lot. So I have like all these sketches of like collar, but like, oh, do I want a collarbone? Do I want any sort of, you know, the kind of crevices and holes that are all over a skeleton, like in the pelvis? I do think she ended up looking a little bit more like an alien than a skeleton. But just like what elements were really needed for like expressiveness and what could I kind of, you know, get rid of with distance or like add when she's closer up.
Go ahead, Pete, please.
I was just going to wonder, like, what came first, your love of music, your love of skeletons or bats? I really love this story. I also really love the friendship between the skeleton and the bat. I was just wondering what kind of passion started this kind of project. Was it a love for music, a love of your music teacher back in the day, or maybe of bats or skeletons?
I definitely love bats and skeletons. I've definitely always wanted to be a skilled musician and have never been.
Okay.
Much like Skeletor, actually she's better than me, but like learned piano when I was younger and then I kind of forgot how to read music and then like started writing down when I would like make little songs on the piano and write down my own version of like writing music, which was terrible, but I can still read it. And I've explained my logic to friends. They're like, this is ridiculous. This is terrible. I grew up with a lot of like not very well taken care of instruments like in the house. My mom has an old fiddle like Skeletor with a completely shredded bow, and it's missing at this point two of its four strings. But I remember like seeing what I could like screech out on it and being like, oh, I can do Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, but of course it's like really bad sounding. So I guess maybe inspired by like me just messing around on like pretty like old moldy accordions and stuff like that.
Well, on a similar question, and this is kind of a perennial question that I ask on the show and everybody gives a different answer, so I'm always curious, is it's hard to represent music on the comic book page because you can't hear it, right? So you clearly found a way to depict that, found a way to work that into the book. Again, what was important for you in terms of this? How much did you play around with, okay, I could depict music this way versus that way, or was it just sort of a no-brainer and you were good to go?
I think for some reason I knew it was going to be glowing, like these ribbons of music kind of flowing around. I guess the motion was the most important thing for me, of just it zooming around the page with Skellinor or like bouncing around with her, and trying to make the music notes kind of dance around. And like, especially like old sheet music where it's all like handwritten with a quill is like absolutely beautiful. And like, I love seeing everybody's like different ways of like doing visual music. But just like the kind of lilting, moving around the page very lightly was my main goal.
This book is so creative and fun. I really like the way the tombstone just kind of opens like a door. how did you, were you just kind of playing around with different stuff, or how did you kind of discover that kind of unique?
Do tombstones do that?
Yeah, because is that true? Do you know that's from experience? Like,
that is just, it's the same shape as a door. So I was like, oh, she'll open it like a door. A friend asked like, oh, how does that like work? Like, does she, is it like a portal? Or like in my head, there's actually like a ladder she climbs up to get to it, which also doesn't make any sense because you see the inside of her coffin and there's no ladder there.
Okay,
but cool. Definitely have like skeleton lore that is like, oh, this is just true about skeletons, like in my head.
I love that. I love the idea. I'm always a big fan of having the backstory and having the information, but then not actually having to use it or explain it in any way, because I think that comes through with the art and the story, right? Like, you know how she got up there. You know she climbed the ladder to come out of the tombstone door. But all we get to see is this very funny visual of opening a tombstone like a door, and that's all you need. That's it.
Yeah, like, don't question why she has a xylophone made of many bones. Don't ask whose bones there are. Like, if there were other skeletons, and Skellinor just got rid of them all.
Yeah. Oh man, that this story takes a dark turn when you think.
Yeah, very quickly.
Talk about the bat friend a little bit. I mean, yeah, they go together in a very spooky Halloween-y way. But again, was that just sort of a no-brainer in terms of a bat, or did you play with other Halloween-type animals?
Did you grow up with a bat friend just like Skellinor?
Exactly.
I did not grow up with a bat friend, but I was always a big fan of bats because we had bats in our backyard.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Belfry for a second there. I was like.
We would, like, if you sit in the backyard on summer nights, you could see them kind of flitting around, backlit by the, like, night sky. But I had, Batima, I think, came in pretty quickly. I think as soon as I realized I couldn't make her name a pun, and it was either going to be Batima or Patricia. But I have a long list of like different kinds of bats she was going to be based off of, and drawings like kind of trying to narrow it down. But she ended up pretty, I think it's just a common pipistrelle. But she looks pretty far from that at this point because she's so tiny on the page. I had to simplify her a lot.
Since this is getting back to the music a little bit, since you do have the music in the book, is that anything that you could see like putting out into the world in any way, like actually making not physical versions of the songs, but actual recordings of the songs to put out there?
I wish I could do that. But again, I'm not a composer myself. Yeah. So I was very worried about like, if somebody actually knows how to do music, they're going to look at this and it's going to be complete nonsense. Which most of it is. Some of the songs are actually based off of real songs. So I think the song that I would just take the notes off the actual sheet music and like kind of place them in a general order. So it is old Joe Clark kind of played nonsensically on the page. And the scene where the kind of training sequence, when Miss Retsi Miziva and Donovit are like fiddling at each other. That's Orange Blossom Special, which is a really quick fiddle song. But most of the songs in it, unless I had a specific idea, like, oh, I know I want like a really fast fiddle song, are not like I would go to the specific instrument for inspiration and find sheet music in that, but I wouldn't do, like, at this point, all the songs are all jumbled up.
Now, go ahead, Pete.
I was just going to say, I really love your art style. Like, how did you kind of get going, and what was the thing that kind of got you hooked on, you know, drawing, or was there a comic that spoke to you, or a certain animated film or something that made you kind of be like, this is what I want to do?
So I like drawing since forever. But then in fifth grade, there was a kid in my class who had an anime drawing of Spirit from, from Spirit, the, what is it? Stallion of the
Cimmerian.
I almost said Cimmerillion.
that's very different. Too much lore in that one.
But that would be awesome. but I was like, wow. And I like specifically befriended them because I love this. I'd like not really registered like anime or manga before. And then we started drawing this like long-winded, like all over the place comic together. That we kind of pass around the class called The Adventures of Jinju and Peppermint. And that's when I was like, I want to be a cartoonist.
Oh, man, that's cool.
Now, this is not necessarily your department, but I'm curious if you know anything about this. This is a pretty spooky book. Seems perfect for Halloween time. Why early August? Why was it released then? Is it like a whole pumpkin spice lattes are out now things? Or tying it into
Stop pushing your own agendas, Alvin.
Yeah, I saw you with the... What is that, pumpkin beer?
It's Caramel Pumpkin from Southern Tier. It's time.
Sorry, we had the plug.
It's not great. I got to be honest. I usually like the pumpkin. This is not the best thing. Anyway, take it away.
So I'm not sure the publisher decided that, which I was actually all right with because it's set in summer. Mm-hmm. So it felt like August was a nice in-between of like, okay, this is actually when the book is set. But it's coming out right before back to school season, and it feels like maybe they were planning, okay, we'll catch the back to school kids, and then we'll get a second wind come Halloween.
Yeah, well, and I guess not to get into publishing strategy or anything, I guess it gets ahead of the October glut a little bit, so that when people are putting together lists of like, here's some spooky comics to check out for Halloween, yours is already right there. It's right on shelves and it's top of mind for people.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be already then a bestseller and everybody will have it.
Yeah, let's hope so.
On their displays.
Yes, it's fingers crossed. I think that's going to happen. What's, not to talk about the next thing, but what is next for you? Do you have something else lined up at this point? Or what do you want to plug, if anything?
I have a picture book pitch that has gone nowhere. So next, I actually really want to do a... I recently got obsessed with the original Beauty and the Beast, which was, you know, novel from 1740, which I did not expect to be as insane as it was, but it's all kinds of bullshit happening and fairies like killing people. But I really would like to do my own version of that, or another like short graphic novel for kids, some similar length to Skeletor. And, you know, brightly colored and fun.
Cool.
Awesome. Emily, congratulations. The book is delightful.
Yeah, so much fun.
I think it is going to be a big hit this Halloween. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Have a good
night. Take care.
Bye. All right, there we go. Once again, the book is called Skeletor, The Decomposer. It's out in stores everywhere right now from Emily Ettlinger. It is, like I said, it really is delightful, I think. Hand it to any kid from 6 to 9, but also older than that.
Exactly.
We're children. We're large children, right, Pete?
That's right. Yeah, and I think it is one of those all ages fun books where, you know, there's a lot of humor in there. There's a little something for everybody. The art's fantastic. It's a beautiful story. Definitely worth checking out.
Awesome. Why don't we bring in our next guest now? There are two of the folks behind Chase and Catch. A graphic novel, I was about to say collection series, that has its second volume coming out very shortly on August 29th. Ladies and gentlemen, Justin Jordan and Andre Lavoie, welcome to the show.
Hello. Hey, guys.
Very excited to have you here to talk about Chase and Catch. Before we even get to that, I want to take it even broader, even further back, because Andre, you are the creative director for Saturday Originals, which is the publisher of this. I know this, but I'm going to ask you the question anyway, as if I don't know. What is Saturday Originals?
Well, Saturday Originals is really, you know, it's a new company. It stems from Saturday Animation Studio. We've been in business for a long while, and so we created Saturday Originals to really concentrate on the publishing side of original studio-owned IPs. And so, hence the name, you know, Saturday. We're really looking to rekindle and harness kind of that Saturday morning magic, like we used to, like from, you know, the 80s. And bring it to, you know, kids today. That, you know, because back in the 80s, you know, what we watched in the morning and how we watched it, you know, influenced our day. A lot of times influenced our play patterns, things we would talk about with our friends, and so on and so forth. So that's Saturday Originals.
Yeah. So cool. You're only allowed to read these comics until 9 a.m. and then after that, no.
Exactly.
Go.
Well, you know, that's a very good point. And one of those things that we say around the studio is, you know, it's hashtag Saturday is every day. So you don't have to read the comic only on Saturdays.
Well, cool. Justin, why don't we turn it to you then to talk about Chase and Catch. So how did you get involved in this? And what is your take on what is important when you're crafting something that is supposed to channel a Saturday morning original, but in comic book form?
So they basically contacted me and said, hey, we have this thing we're developing. Would you like to write it? And it sounded cool. So I did, which is super exciting. Actually getting the Saturday morning kind of vibe was actually really interesting to me, because I'm from that kind of golden age of Saturday morning things. I don't know if in Canada they had this sort of thing, but I do remember there were a few years when I was a kid where they would have this yearly, these are the new cartoons we're going to do, like preview thing that was on at night. And you were, you know, this was before we had the scrolling television channel that would tell you when stuff was on. So you're like, is it time for the preview? Like, it was just below getting the Sears catalog with the toy stuff in it, the wish book that you got at the end of the year. But it was a pretty exciting day for me. So yeah, I just tried to, going off what they kind of had as a concept, then I was trying to figure out what kind of made Saturday morning stuff work, or at least the Saturday morning stuff that I did, which was, you know, so you're trying to end up for kind of self-contained stories with, you know, sort of continuing gags and cool characters that were instantly sort of recognizable and hopefully memorable, cool vehicles, cool tech, that kind of stuff. Cause like, you know, I really like stuff like Mask and Transformers.
Oh yeah.
Even Inhumanoids. There's none of that in there, but that's always one that like popped out into my brain. So yeah. So I was just trying to get that, that sort of alchemy right, which it was a lot of fun to write. So hopefully I got it, you know, reasonably close to what we were looking for.
Yes. Well, so before we jump over there, I do want to mention before I forget, and this is very much a conversational swerve, but we have, and this is not a joke, a professional chef who is a friend of the show. And every week on the show, he either curates or creates a cocktail to go with the show. And this week he created a Chase and Catch cocktail, the Chase and Catch. Which Chase. I'm going to try to read it here, but it has blueberries, lime juice, simple syrup, mezcal, silver tequila, Aperol, and then use some fancy salt. He used Himalayan pig salt. So there you go, for something that is
that nice. Actually sounds awesome. Quite good.
Yeah, it sounds delicious.
He is a legit chef working at a Michelin star restaurant in New Orleans, and I can't believe he does this every week. So
I have a series running at Webtoons called Urban Animal. And a couple of years ago, to me, it seems like a couple of years ago. This was pre-COVID, so it was probably 2018, which is somehow 5 years ago now. They had the party for it, and they made custom drinks for a bunch of the things. So we had Bourbon Animal as our drink. That was actually also pretty tasty, so no complaints. So far, I'm two for two in the projects that I've worked on that have custom drinks. So.
All right.
Well, there you go. I unfortunately did not make one of these this week because I'd already gotten my terrible caramel pumpkin beer, but I'll send it to your guys' way if you want to try it out. And he always makes a good drink, so I'm excited.
Yeah, he does. He also makes amazing food.
Yes. So back to the actual chase and catch, though, because we haven't talked about the concept of the thing. This could go to either of you. Is this the sort of thing where, Andre, you came to Justin and were like, here's the kind of thing we want to do, and then he shaped it up?
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things that we've been doing for the past few years at Saturday is, you know, developing multiple IPs. One of them is Chase and Catch. And so when I came to pitch it to Justin, it was, you know, a lot of work was already on the table, you know, character designs and props, the world, you know, story, and, you know, the general concept of it also was very fleshed out. So, you know, when I pitched it to Justin, it was like, okay, this is going to be a buddy cop action, you know, in a futuristic cyber world in, you know, roughly 2085. So it's, you know, kind of not too far, but far future. These guys, they work to resolve, you know, crimes that we call ultra crimes because they deal with, you know, awesome villains that we call, you know, of course, ultra criminals. And it's basically our lethal weapon for kids.
Lethal weapons, not for kids. I gotta go talk to my children really quick.
Exactly. Oh, right. So every time I need to specify that, it's like, yeah, or lethal weapon, right, for kids. Sure. I can go with that. And
Andre did have to talk me out of the Kenzo thinking about committing suicide.
But yeah, I was gonna say, starts pretty dark, as I recall.
Yeah. Exactly. So.
But you know, but we get what we mean by that, right? It's the banter, it's the relationship between, you know, Riggs and America and stuff like so. In the same way, instantly, then you kind of get where, you know, Kenzo, Chase, and Catch kind of come from, and their contrast, you know, relationship. And so, because Chase is also pretty much our Doogie Howser kind of wonder kid. He's 16. He made it into the force, you know, because he was so smart and because of, you know, what he went through in his youth and stuff like that. And Catch is a prototype robot, right? So he's brand new, you know, first of his kind, you know, stuff like that. And yeah, so it was really about, you know, we want to do an action, you know, comic, high speed pursuits, cool vehicles, over the top, you know, naming convention. You know, as you can see, like, when you start digging into the IP, I can see all the names are very much inspired by 80s cartoons, you know. So it's kind of anchored in a little bit of a, you know, semi-realistic world, but very doesn't take itself seriously, you know, just like the shows that we used to watch, like TMNT and you know, Batman Animated Series and stuff like that. Okay. So and then Justin did his work.
Justin, from a writing perspective, so I know you know this, and I know from knowing your work that you know this definitely, but comics, stories, etc., the way they are now, they're very different than they were back in the 80s. Like, looking back at those 80s cartoons, they're broader. The emotion is more, hey, we're doing 19 minutes of action. And then at the end, like, we got very sad about this thing happened. But then we all laugh. And now here's a PSA. So how do you make sure you're getting that sense of those 80s cartoons while still at the same time making it feel like something that is a modern comic book?
You know, it's tricky. It's a matter of kind of calibrating right for that kind of stuff. So I've given this some thought in regards to, like, this is going to seem like a tangent, but I swear to God it's related. So Stranger Things, right, is not, people think they're like, oh, it's like an 80s pastiche and all that kind of stuff, and it is, but what Stranger Things is good at is making you feel the way that those things in the 80s made you feel when you felt them the first time, which is a deeply unwieldy sentence. And so it's not just a matter of, like, the core of that is not like the synth wave or like the clothes or the fashions or all that kind of stuff. It's that sort of feel. So with this, we're kind of looking at, I got to get it to the emotional level that makes sense for the thing, but I didn't want to, basically you're trying to smooth off some of the rough stuff of what 80s kind of animated Saturday animation stuff did. You know, you're trying to keep what made it unique, but add to it what we've kind of learned and kind of gotten audience expectations to have in the last. My brain wants to say 20 years. I intellectually realized that the 80s were at least 34 years ago, but mm-hmm. you know, I refuse to accept that in my heart. It's 20 years ago. So
yeah, I hear that and appreciate that. When you're saying that, I was just thinking, oh, so you want to sell toys, because that's what all those cartoons basically did.
Oh, they sure were. Like, yeah. But I think that kind of, you know, I think that actually weirdly kind of lends itself to the comic book aesthetic and doing that kind of thing, because if you want to sell toys, they got to look cool, right? Oh, like yeah. they got to look cool first. Hopefully they do something cool that'll be deeply disappointing when you get them out of the package. Like it does in the commercial, but like that won't happen if they make toys of this stuff. I know Andre will guarantee it. So, but yeah, I think that actually lends itself to comics actually fairly well, because there is that visual aspect to them that other stuff sort of doesn't have. And you know, because it's comics and you're not bound by physics or anything else, or the, you know, the difficulties of actually injection molded plastic, we can kind of do what we want. So they actually did a really good job. I was like, yeah, I look at all that stuff and I'm like, yeah, honestly, 45-year-old me thinks it looks pretty cool, so I think kid me would have been all about it. So would have been my jam.
Yeah, definitely.
Andre, on your end, to continue this part of the conversation, you do keep referring to this as IP. Is this the sort of thing where, from the company perspective, I know you have four, I think you're calling them different worlds or something like that. Are you looking at it as like, okay, we're trying to go for, this thing is for this demographic, and we're aiming for this. The comics is one extension of that, and we're looking to create video games and movies and toys and all of these other things. Is that what you're starting with, kind of?
Yeah, for sure. Like, although we're in love with the comic medium, you know, we are building these stories to be able to do create games and be able to create toys. You know, as we were saying, like, yeah, a lot of these cartoons and even comics that we were reading back in the day, they were built to sell toys, but at the same time, it did feed a whole lot into our collective imagination and even our play patterns. And it would feed our day, you know, like kind of playing with our friends and, you know, kind of incarnating a character from our best series and stuff. So yes, exactly. We do aim at, you know, creating video games and toys. That's why we're spending a lot of time on these designs, making sure that they are very cool looking. And they have potential, even the way we create the world, to lends itself in, you know, different video game, you know, mechanics and stuff like that. So yes, very much, very much.
Not to put you on the spot here too much, but this is something that is just a perennial discussion, not just in comics, though particularly in comics, but in entertainment in general, is you've got like Justin working on, also not to put Justin on the spot, but you got Justin fleshing out these characters and working on these characters. If you're extending it into these other areas, how involved are these creators, both in terms of the day-to-day of these extensions, but also financially? Is that something you're thinking about?
I mean, we're very much starting right now in discussion with multiple collaborators from, you know, different industries, of course. And, you know, just from a publisher standpoint, we learned a lot about just, you know, digital publishing and, you know, the budgets required for all of this. And so, of course, we're not seeing ourselves as, you know, being alone in that adventure. We are talking with, again, with people who have a lot of experience in different industries. But we do want to stay very much involved in everything from a creative aspect, making sure that, you know, the vision for all these worlds is, you know, coherent throughout all the different mediums, and not just, you know, send our child away without his lunchbox.
Fair way of putting it. And ties into the whole Saturday morning thing there.
Exactly. Kind
of, except for the lunchbox. That would be more of a weekday thing. Anyway.
Yeah, but the pictures on it, you know, was very much inspired by Saturday.
Okay. We worked it out. You got the first volume in the Rearview Mirror. I read it. It's great. It's super fun.
Yeah, it's really
awesome.
But we
do have the second volume coming up pretty quickly. So, Justin, what can you tease about that in these new adventures for Chase and Catch?
Well, in the second volume, you'll get to see more of Vanish, the evil criminal organization, and you'll get hints that there might be a greater plan unfolding that Kenzo is going to have to figure out if, you know, he can survive long enough to figure it out.
Awesome.
Well, I just want to say, reading it, the kid in me was sold. I would love to see now a cartoon or some action figures. You guys did a great job. The start was real easy to kind of get on board with the concept, and it grows right into action and fun. So congratulations. It's a blast to read.
Thank you. Yeah, I realized I wrote it, but I actually also like it. So I was like, oh, this is fun, which, you know, not everything works. So when something comes out and you're like, yeah, no complaints, this is cool. Like, yeah, I'll be happy when people read this and hopefully enjoy it.
Justin, I did want to ask you, just because you brought up Urban Animal, we've been discussing Webtoon a lot the past couple of weeks on the show. The point that I keep bringing up here, because we spend a lot of time talking about like Marvel and DC and big superhero comics, is my impression is Webtoon is exponentially bigger than all of that. Is that correct, would you say?
It is. I'll take Urban Animal for an example. We get... we peaked in terms of our readership in, like, season 3. But even now, we get 50 or 60,000 readers a week, unique readers a week. We have 500,000 subs, and we have 32 million views. Compared to like regular comics where you're lucky to crack 100K, like it's just a different scale. And it was and is fascinating when you get into it. So for instance, Webtoons has FastPass, which basically people just pay a nominal amount. I think it's like $1 to read early. You know, we're a couple of weeks ahead, so they can read 3 or 4 episodes ahead. And man, the number of people that read, that paid or something they could read for free was actually kind of astonishing. Like, wow. It just, the amount they're paying is much smaller, but like, I've put out a lot of print comics that didn't have that many people buy the print copy for something they could get for free. So yeah, the scale is just different. Like, it's one of these things whenever people, I'm going to try to keep this rant brief because it could go on for a very long time, but people, and this includes me, have a tendency to talk about comics, but what they mean is direct market American comics, which I love. I love a good comic shop, but that is probably the smallest of the what would really be called comics operating in America, much less the world. Like, it's, you get stuff like Webtoons, which is just, Urban Animal is basically a mid-tier book. Like, we're successful enough that like we make money and we keep going. You know, we've gotten 5 seasons out of it, but things like Lore Olympus get hundreds of times what we get. You're looking at millions of people reading it every week. And I did, you know, it's not a direct comparison, and I don't think I'm credited in it, which is funny, but I spent several years writing the comics that are in the Call of Duty mobile game, which is another like scale again of like how many people are reading. So when you get to the actual comics form, you get stuff like Dave Pilkey's Dogman, like last print run was 7 million copies. And like, that's for real comics. Like, you get stuff like Diary of a Wimpy Kid that's like maybe comics, but like, no, Dogman's for kids, but it's comics. And it has a massive audience. So yeah, there's just all these sort of other markets that float around that like, people are really into comics. They're just not making it into comic shops for whatever reason, which is kind of frustrating to me, who mostly works in that venue. It's like, you know, come on, guys, you'll like what we got. I promise. Probably.
I mean, obviously, you're still working on, Jason Katch at least leans towards a little bit more of a traditional comic, even though you guys are releasing it digitally, just because of the page format, I think, like the way that it looks. But You've done books that we love. We love like Luther Strode. Those series were fantastic. Is that something that you'd ever want to get back to, like doing Image Comics, or is just the basic idea of, you can put something up on Webtoon and get exponentially more? Why not?
No, I was talking to Andre earlier today. I still love the smell of new comics too much when you get them straight from the printer. Like, you know what I mean? No, I love doing that. I like doing webtoon stuff, and I have a terminal inability to stay in my lane, which is why you simultaneously have written things like Luther Strode and Chase and Catch, which are very different in some very meaningful ways. But no, I'm still doing print comics, and I would like to do more specifically at Image. I've actually got some pitches that I need to do for them. It's just, man, it's a tough road, right? Like, I'm a writer, so I can work on a bunch of stuff at once, and my burden's there. But whenever I take stuff to Image in particular, like, I'm not a big enough deal generally to warrant an advance, which means I got to get an art team who's willing to take it on faith that we could make some money some days. And man, you got to be real sure to like get a whole art team to invest it, because that's basically all they're going to be able to do, you know. Yeah. And it just makes it hard. That's why I have 18 creator-owned things, wow. One of which is not released, but it's sitting in the vault somewhere. So hopefully it'll be released at some point. And you know, of those, four are truly like Image central, what people think of as Image. Like, we own everything, we, you know, we paid for it, you know. So we got 4 out of 18. This is giving you an idea of like, wow, it's worth it to go to other things. And then of those four, two of them make money and two made $0, like, all wow. So you know, you're looking at like, a when you do that, and honestly I think a 50-50 hit rate is actually probably batting way above average. So it's just, it's the reality of that market, you know what I mean? And it's frustrating to me because I know the readers are out there. So it's, you know, trying to find ways to build that audience and bring them to what you're selling.
Well, speaking of which, Andre, back to you then, in terms of getting folks to read Chase and Catch, where can they check it out? Where can they check out the first one and stay tuned for the second one?
Yeah, so issue one is out. It's available on Amazon Kindle Store and Apple Books. First issue is free, so you can give it a go. And it's a 42-page book. And then same for issue two, coming out on the 29th, same platforms. And then once we're pretty confident that we're done with production, we'll probably do something for a print version.
Awesome.
It's definitely worth getting. It's a fun read. So much cool. It's really cool characters and hell of a story.
Thank you guys so much for coming on. We appreciate it. Congrats on everything, and looking forward to the second volume.
Yeah,
thanks for having us.
Thank you much, Alex Beat.
All right,
take care.
All right, there we go. Once again, the book is called Chase and Catch. You can check it out from Saturday Originals, wherever books are sold online, specifically Apple and Amazon are the places.
First issue is free, man.
Yeah, there you go. Can't get cheaper than that.
You can't.
Unless they're paying you, I guess.
That's how you get addicted, man. The first one's free.
Oh, my God. Do you snort them? Because I usually grind up my comics and then I snort them. That's cool.
You're so highfalutin, man. Yeah.
I'm highfalutin. The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
All right, folks, we are going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions.
Woo! And I got a question.
Wait, hold on. And if you've got a question and are not
I've got a question. What do I do?
If you're not P, Pete, who's already on the show, just drop it in the comments over
at Facebook
or YouTube or Twitch. Not on X, even though it's my favorite site. I love it. It's really just doing some really good work lately. but you can't drop questions over there, even though we're live. But Pete, what is your question? What's going on?
I just want to check in with you about your unbelievable Batman Lego piece that you have next to you there that we were you were casually pointing at when bats came up in conversation. How are you feeling about it, buddy? Are you still you know, proud of your work? Are you over it at this point? I mean, I went down like a TikTok hole of just like, there are people who have made that particular one and have done some really interesting lighting stuff with it. Like, you know.
Oh, is that what we're getting at here? Is that the end result? Is you want me to put some lighting in it? Because
no, I'm just wondering. Like, I've just seen a lot of people online like geeking out over it, and I was just wondering, are you like on to the next Lego obsession? Or are you still?
No. This is my thing. Like, I explained this at the beginning, but I always wanted to make one of those enormous Lego sets. Mm-hmm. And I had originally set my sights on, like, I would get a Millennium Falcon or
right,
get
that's a Death the classic.
Star or something like that. Like, something huge. But one of the problems is they're huge. They're enormous. Like, where do you put them?
So many bags.
So expensive. Also, like, Legos are prohibitively expensive. But then I saw this, and I love Batman Returns, and also it fits on my shelf, and it's a showpiece on my shelf that I could just put on there, and it's not the Millennium Falcon, like, sticking out, and my kids keep banging their heads into it and stuff, and then I was like, all right, this is the one. Gotta get it.
Alex, I hate to interrupt, but I feel like you misheard my question. Like, as somebody who is a collector or maybe has an addiction or something like that, like, when I want something and I'm like, oh my God, I've always wanted to do this thing, as soon as I have it and it's done, I don't really get to enjoy it because now I'm just like, what's the next thing I'm going to get?
Oh, no.
Like,
I'm good.
This you're good. That itch. You just won
that
and done.
That itch.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah, I thought I was worried about that a little bit, and I like Legos and I like looking at the sets, but I've actually also on TikTok, there's seen people doing like builds of the Millennium Falcon. I'm like, that's cool. I'm good. I don't need to spend the $400 or $500.
That's impressive right now. Because for me, it opens up a whole door, and then it's like I'm in this world, and then I'm like, oh my God, what have I done?
This is great. This is very satisfying. It's a very cool set.
Impressive.
Great question. Thank you so much, Pete. We got a couple from actual people. No insult to you. This is from Frederica Rosa. Are you guys excited for Ahsoka? And what's something from the Star Wars comics you want to see animated or live action? So, Pete, we're taping right now, but they changed the premiere time of Ahsoka. I don't know if you know this.
Wait, are you serious? I'm missing it?
No, you're not missing it right now, but
these
shows have been coming out on at 3 a.m., like, as streaming shows. They changed it so that tonight, Tuesday night, as we're taping, the first two episodes are going to be out at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Okay.
And then subsequent episodes, we got to wrap this up. Subsequent episodes are going to come out at 9 p.m. That is the thing that I am most excited for with Ahsoka at this point. I love that I don't have to wake up at 3 and watch a TV show.
Yeah, you were really into waking up at 3, which is
that's my job is entertainment journalism. So like, I got to watch it so I can, because also, so I have to wake up at 3, watch the show, make breakfast for the kids, put the lunches together and everything. And then I have my writers being like, what are we going to write about this? I just watched it at the luxurious time of 8 a.m. or whatever it is. But I got to watch it early. So now I could just, I guess, not watch it either because we're doing our show. So there you go. But I'll figure it out.
I am very excited. I hope it's going to be great. The preview teaser or whatever that was really, I mean, anytime you have, you know, two lightsabers, you know, that's it.
When you're like, oh, that guy just has one lightsaber. And then he pulls out a second one. You're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Pete, can I say that I've seen the first two episodes?
What? Oh my God, I hate you, man. Can you give us anything
about it, though? Right?
Can you?
No, I can say whatever I want, but you don't want me to say stuff, right?
Well, you could give us a thumbs up or thumbs down or something.
Oh, sure. I didn't like it.
What? You're kidding?
I'm sorry. No, I'm not kidding.
Oh no.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I've talked to other people.
Oh no.
Who did love it. To give some framing here, I watched the first season of Rebels and an episode here and there of Clone Wars, and that's it. Mm-hmm. There's just something about the animation style that I just cannot get with. I know people love the shows. That's great. But, they just don't work for me. People I've talked to who religiously watch those shows were so excited to see this because this is a direct continuation, particularly of Rebels.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like picking up that with live-action characters. So if you care about those characters, that's great. As somebody who doesn't necessarily, I didn't find much to care about. Like, it looked nice, and everybody's fine in it.
Jedi's and lightsabers, like, what?
I mean, yes, I like lightsaber fights. I'm a human being.
What the fuck, man? Turn in your nerd card.
Here's my biggest problem with the show. My biggest problem with the show, which was driving me insane the entire time I was watching it, is it has this rhythm of everybody pauses between each other's lines. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know if I was going back and watching the animated shows, because it's Dave Filoni who did the anime shows directing it, where it is pauses long enough that somebody will say something, they'll cut to the other person, and it's a long enough pause that it sounds like maybe they're saying their line in their head, and then they're saying it out loud.
But that seems like an editing issue where it's like,
100%.
Take out those seconds. Like, why wouldn't you cut that out?
It's the pace of it was driving me bonkers the entire time. Because, I want to like it. It looks nice. Ray Stevenson, may he rest in peace, rules in the show. He's a great villain. Oh, but, man. It's so slow. It's so drawn out.
Well, what was worse is that pause you just took there was driving me crazy. That's what I'm saying.
There you go. That was an example.
But sometimes it adds drama,
Not if it's every line. Anyway, you'll see what you think. I'm sure you'll love it. Yeah. And lots of people do love it.
There hasn't been much that I haven't loved when it's come to that lately. So
yeah, there you go. And the second part of the question was, what's something for the Star Wars comics you want to see animated or live action? Big thing for me, I want to see 000 and, oh my God, who's the other one? Who's the other evil droid? It's 000 is the evil C-3PO. And then the R2, I'm forgetting. We've already got Black Crescenton or whatever his name is. But those are the two ones. I want to see the Dick C-3PO and the Dick R2.
Anything Greg Pak does, I would love to see animated or live action. His run and those Marvel Star Wars books have been phenomenal.
Yeah, I would love to see. He wrote the Darth Vader character, right? Yeah. If you could ever see Darth Vader in live action, that would be...
It would be sick.
Or like a Death Star. Like if they put a Death Star in something, that would be so cool. Oh, this is from Omnia's Soul Art Show. Pete, would you watch a movie of The Punisher into the Punisherverse if it had all the Punishers, including Frank and Castle?
Great. Well, hey, Omnia's Soul Art, thanks for picking a fight with me. I appreciate that. Super nice of you. You lose me if you put Frank and Castle in something. I mean, maybe I could just watch up until a certain point. And then when they mention Frankencastle, I can turn it off and walk away because it's a deal breaker.
Even if it finally brought together on screen Thomas Jane, Dolph Lundgren, we just talked about this, not Ray Stevenson, but Frank Bernthal? John Bernthal,
come on, man.
He changed his first name to Frank because he's that would be a weird movie. I don't like that idea. All right. I think that's actually it for your audience questions. I usually go up at the end of that sentence. Questions!
All right. Yeah, there we go. It is.
So why don't we move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
Alrighty. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of to online comics at midtowncomics.com. If you had $25, you'd get some comics. So why not? Or, ooh, we got some. Oh, no, it's just you saying, say me. It's an opportunity to win some cash and spend on some comics. So, that way it's like they're free,
There you go. Like Chase and Catch.
Exactly.
So free, the first issue. So there you go. Plug, plug, plug. Ooh, Straight Bullet is here.
Straight Bullies?
Straight Bullet. You want to do trivia?
Mmm, fun.
I bet he does. Mm. Let's stay silent, though. Let's
yeah, stay silent. We'll keep that dramatic pause going. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Let's really
feel that, you know?
Yeah.
Drive you crazy.
Spoke first. Oh, David said I'll do it. We missed it between me saying it. All right, David. David is doing trivia is what I'm going to type here. All right, take it away, Pete.
All right, David. All right, here we go. Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend, Clarence Avant. R.I.P. to the Godfather. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. What co-creator is coming back to do one more Blade run? Is it A. Marv Wolfman, B. James Howlett, or C. Marie Howell?
I will mention, if you're listening to our new Comic Book Club news podcast, which you can get in its own dedicated Comic Book Club news feed, you would know the answer to that because we reported about it on the podcast.
Oh, wow. See, I don't listen, so I'm redoing things we've already talked about.
No, that's fine. I like it. It's a good plug. We got A from David, which is correct. Wolfman. Marv Wolfman coming back to Tomb of Dracula.
Yeah, very excited. It's awesome that a guy with the name Marv Wolfman started a Dracula book. I mean, it just makes sense. You know what I mean? Yeah.
There's nothing else that's made more sense in my life.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, question number two. JT4's new book is a Christmas-themed horror comic called blank. Is it A, The Deviant, B, Out of Coal, So It's Murder Time, or C, Whoopi Goldberg?
Oh, interesting. You know, we actually reported on that in the Comic Book Club news podcast.
Oh, man.
Which, you could check out. Its own dedicated Comic Book Club news.
Now I'm feeling very uncreative.
No, this is great. A little 5-minute news blast in your ears every single morning, every day of the week. There's a new show. 5 minutes.
Hey. You guys got to get better news. You know what I mean? Like, if I can find this, then you guys got to do a better job.
More hidden news.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, great. You were correct. It is A. I'm detecting a pattern here, but I'm going to keep going. Okay, what DC comic that comes out in September recasts a classic team-up? Hopefully they didn't cover this on that bullshit news show. Is it A, Batman and Robin, B, I'm getting too old for this shit, or C, Danny Glover?
Shout out to Lethal Weapon. Two? Yeah, I was going to say, did you write those last two before we talked to the...
No, but I knew that joke was coming, so I didn't make that joke. We were talking about Lethal Weapon earlier.
I'm glad I didn't make that joke.
Yeah, I was worried.
That was a real primo joke, man.
Oh, man.
And we didn't actually report on that on Comic Book Club News. That's a big scoop.
I scooped you!
For Comic Book Club News' direct competitor, Comic Book Club.
Don't get your news from those assholes. Come to the live show. That's where the real news is.
Yeah, David says A.
But he wants it to be C, which makes sense. You are correct, sir. $25 is yours, David. Thank you so much for playing. You are tonight's big winner.
Yeah, so there you go. David, shoot us an email, and we will get you a gift card to Midtown Comics for $25. What was your secret movie, Pete?
I'm talking about the 1985 juggernaut, The Color Purple.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Oh, yeah. Classic.
Now, as we all know, comics are cool. They're coming out all the time. Pete, what are you looking forward to that is coming out this week, either for already in stores from DC or coming out tomorrow from a lot of other publishers?
Well, Penguin number one. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to talk to you about that. And then Ice Cream Man number 36. Ooh.
Both great choices.
Oh, thank you, Alex. Oh, my God.
Lots of stuff I'm excited about. Very curious to check out from Marvel, both the Captain America finale and the Immortal Thor. Those are two big titles that are coming out. But last issue of Dark Knights of Steel from DC Comics.
Yeah.
That's a title that we've really liked a lot, so curious to check that out. And also, I will give a sneak big up shout-out to Jean Grey, number one, from Marvel, by the legendary Louise Simonson. you could check out. Wow. All right. We're going to get into it. Boom. And that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Emily Ettlinger for coming on to talk about Skellinor the Decomposer. Also, yeah. Justin Jordan and Andre Lavoie talk about Chase and Catch and everything else going on at Saturday Originals. Next week on the show, Tom Scioli is going to be here to talk about I Am Stan, his comic book biography of Stan Lee. Also, Scott Brian Wilson will return with Max Fuchs to talk about their new book, Kill More.
Yeah.
Bunch of things to plug. Here's a big one to plug. Scott Pilgrim versus the podcast. We just launched this. This is going to be a podcast.
Just launched.
New pod.
Who this?
It is all about Scott Pilgrim, as you can figure out. You can check it out on its own dedicated feeds. Also, Comic Book Club News, as we mentioned.
Sons of Mon,
our DC podcast. Check that out for regular news updates. And eventually, we'll talk about Blue Beetle. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, doing news updates there. Riverdale After Dark, final episode tomorrow.
Oh, my God.
Check it out.
Oh, my God. You're not ready. You're not ready.
Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all.
What are we going
to
do after? I don't know.
Die. Subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Take care of yourself out there. We need you. Shout out to Jimmy Gatewood.